My absolute pleasure to welcome back to the show from Education Minnesota. It's Denise Specht. She's kind enough to join us today to talk about things with the Teachers Union. Hi, Denise. How are you today?
Hi there. Thanks for having me again.
My pleasure. It's actually my pleasure to have you back. I got to start with let's talk about the teachers, the pandemic, how things are going. I know it's been tough. There are no good answers to any of this, but how have you been working with the teachers who I know have been going through a real tough time this pandemic?
Oh, it's been tough for everyone, educators, parents, students. I just can't believe all of the challenges, but all of the work that all three of them have been doing to make the best out of this year. I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel here, but it is still going to require us all to be patient and flexible and to continue working with one another.
Taking it from two different approaches on this, the first one is getting the teachers back in the classroom. I'm very grateful. I'm in the Hopkins School District. They're starting back with some in-person junior high school. They've been working with the elementary schools. The making sure that we've had some school districts where, unfortunately, I think Bloomington had the problem, where they get in there and all of a sudden there's an outbreak of the coronavirus within the school and they have to shut down. That's what you don't want to have happen. Talk a little bit about the safety precautions that you're working with to make sure that the environment the teachers are going back into is safe.
Right. You know, your example is a good one. I think that the public and actually all of us need to remember that we are still in the middle of a pandemic, hoping to get out of it. And so we do need to be ready for, opening and closing and opening and closing. Like, there's just a lot of necessity to be very fluid here. And one of the things that is just paramount is community spread. We have to do everything we can out in the community to minimize the spread. We can try to make, inside of our schools as safe as possible, but they're not islands. You know, people travel, to and fro, a school building. So that community spread absolutely needs to be watched at all times. But the CDC is asking for a number of things, mask requirements, making sure that there is social distancing at least 6 feet when transmission rates are high in a community. You know, proper hand washing stations and making sure that there's good ventilation, contact tracing and, COVID testing in our schools. Most importantly, though, and Bloomington is an example, we cannot run our schools if we don't have enough healthy staff. So it is going to require all of us to continue to do the right things inside and outside of the schools.
I have learned from your fantastic example, one of the reasons why education in Minnesota is such a gold standard is that the teachers union keeps fighting for the good standards for the kids. You are going to be facing a fairly Herculean effort here when we get done. There have been a lot of reports about how the distance learning has created a drag, that you are having definitely kids that need that in-person environment, that they have not been able to have it, and we're seeing the effects of this on the education. Is Education Minnesota working on some contingency plans that when, when we're blessed and we all get to go back to school again, that we are going to have programs in place to get these kids back up to speed?
Right. There is no substitute for in-person teaching and learning. We know that. But we also know that educators, students, and families have been working really hard, in the absence of that. So I don't want to negate all of the efforts that happened, but we do want to be in person as soon as possible, as soon as it's safe. I think the most important thing that we can do is students and teachers are back in our schools, that we really take a good look at what do the students need? Where are they at? We have to really take the time to get to know them again, to find out what their needs are, and then actually provide those needs. That's why we're asking for more funding at the legislature. That's why we're supporting the COVID relief funding from the federal government, because we just don't have enough supports in our schools right now. You've heard me say this before, our schools weren't doing well for all of our students before the pandemic. And the pandemic has really just shown a light on, the inequities and where the problems are. We cannot ignore that moving forward. So we need to get serious about having enough counselors in our schools, making sure that there are enough programs and resources to meet the needs of all of our students moving forward. You know, we just can't move back to business as usual or normal, because normal wasn't cutting it for all of our students.
Yeah, and there is going to be, as you talk about counselors too, it's not just our sensational teachers, but it is also the support system in place within the school, because we can already see this train coming online. There's going to be a lot of frustrated kids. I've seen some of the numbers of kids who are failing classes now because of this online learning. You're going to have a lot of kids back in person who are frustrated. You don't want to give them to give up hope. You don't want them to feel like there isn't help for them. You're going to have that system in place as well.
That's right. I mean, these are extraordinary times. We can't compare this to anything, especially our students can't really. Nothing like this has ever happened in their academic careers. So we have to really treat this as what it was, people doing their best, doing everything they could during this remarkable time. And now we need to be patient and work with the students as we move forward. So there are talks all over the place about, extended learning time. Maybe that is, extra programs in the summer. Maybe it is, certain times in the school year where there are some extra opportunities for our students. Those are on the table, and we do want to talk with them about them with the state of Minnesota and all of the school districts. What we don't want to do, though, is lose sight on how we should be learning from what we went through in this pandemic.
Yes.
Obviously, we need to get our students, kind of look at this from a recovery standpoint, and get that, really focus on COVID recovery. But if we're not serious about making things better in the long term, you can spend 5 weeks in the summer helping a student catch up. But if we go back to large class sizes, programs that are going to be cut because of budget cuts, back to an environment where we've got 1,000 counselors, or I'm sorry, one counselor to 1,000 students, then this really was all for naught. We have to improve what we've been doing for the long haul.
Denise Specht is kind enough to join us, president of Education Minnesota. Denise, I want to touch on the Page Amendment. Alan Page, the former Minnesota Supreme Court Justice, is behind an effort with a lot of people in the Our Children Minnesota organization, which wants to enshrine in the state constitution that education is a civil right. That they feel as if that by doing so, it would push for more equitable education across the board. Talk a little bit about that and the position of Education Minnesota on this.
Right. Well, first of all, Education Minnesota and Justice Page and Neil Kashkari at the Federal Reserve, we share the same concerns about the inequities in our public education system. We just simply disagree on the approach. The first thing that I would offer is what I believe Minnesota students and schools lose if this amendment were to pass. First of all, it removes the clear obligation of the legislature to raise taxes to pay for a public education, through efficient schools. I just got done talking about, the extreme needs in our schools. I get a little scared when I hear things about like that we're going to eliminate the responsibility from the legislature to fund and tax our schools, when I've already seen what happens when we don't have enough funding. What it also does is it eliminates the state's obligation to provide a general and uniform system of public schools. That uniformity clause is important for a couple of reasons. One is when you remove that uniform system, then really what you're saying is that all students don't need the same access, that it's okay if we have an unequal system in our public schools, in certain places. I just believe that no matter what a student's zip code is or the color of their skin or who they worship, everybody should have access to the same opportunities. So I think there's an equity issue there. The other thing is that when you take out that uniformity clause, I believe that it does open the door for vouchers. This has been kind of the trophy that national right-wing think tanks Alec, actually, you know, Mr. Kashkari, when he ran for governor in the state of California, you know, ran on a pro-voucher agenda. We just do not believe that we should be opening the door for a possibility that we would have voucher laws in the state of Minnesota, and that uniformity clause has really closed the door in other states. And I think that's why there are people who are moving that. So that's what we lose.
When I look at education, and I talk about education a lot here, we do have a massive funding problem here. I mean, the wealthier suburban schools generally do pretty okay, but you got rural schools where the tax base just is getting hammered, and when farmers' margins are $24,000, $25,000 a year, it's hard to get another referendum on a school district. In the inner city, because of the cost of things, because of the volume of people, it's hard to get that money in place, and it's more difficult, I think, considering the volume of kids you're educating. I agree with you wholeheartedly. The problem I have with this is how much Republicans are loving the idea of it, because I think what they're looking at is an opportunity to get past the teachers union and then basically force either charter schools or vouchers on these school districts, moving the money from a tax system for that's the tax base is paying for their own schools to private industry running these schools, or vouchers for kids to go to a private school, which once again, most of the time, that leaves, what, about 80, 85% of the kids in a school district behind, while a select few get to go into a different school. That leaves a lot of people behind, and you generally don't get a good quality education.
Well, the way I look at it is, you know, just looking at this from urgency, the needs of Minnesota students, black, brown, white, no matter where they live, they are urgent and obvious. And I just don't believe that our students can wait. You know, the Minnesota legislature can act right now. All of the people who are in favor of this or, you know, not in favor of the point is there are bills moving through the legislature right now that could change the lives of students tomorrow. When I look at the amendment, and when I've asked the advocates of the amendment about it, like, how would this work? What would be the next step after it passes? What would the first thing that would be on the list? What do you need to do first? And it's confusing. There's real no clear answer. And so I just look, you know, I'm just looking at what do students need now and what can make a difference now. You know, we can lower class sizes now. We could have more counselors in our school right now. We can increase, you know, teachers of color. Right now, we can have more voluntary pre-K options. There are just so many things on the list, and I'm just looking for what we can do without needing to change the Constitution to do it. We don't need the courts or anybody else to tell the state of Minnesota and our elected leaders what they need to do. They know what they need to do, and we need to hold them accountable.
And you just nailed it right there, because it's the courts, and the Republicans know. Well, the Republicans know they're never not going to really probably ever get back to a point where they have the ability to universally control, you know, all elements, the House, Senate, and the governor's office. But the reality is that by doing this, they don't have to. They can just basically stall any bill in the House or the Senate, prevent any education funding from getting passed, and then have the courts, who really are not a legislative branch, basically shrug their shoulders. I said, well, I guess you're going to have to start offering vouchers, because you have to be able to give these kids a right to go someplace else. I think it's an end-around way to privatize education, which once again, not only does charter schools, and I've seen the numbers, the testing in public schools is far better than the testing in charter schools for the most part. And when you're looking at vouchers, you're not giving a voucher to every kid in that school district, which means there's 80, 85% of that school district left behind with a much smaller budget that gets a much worse quality education. I don't think that either one of these ideas really works very well.
I don't see the evidence in other states. I know that the advocates will point to Florida as, you know, where this is working well. They did amend their constitution a couple decades ago, and they ended up needing to amend it two more times because the first time they didn't get it right. It didn't do what they wanted it to do, so they had to do it a couple of more times. They also, you know, are holding back students who can't read in third grade. They are failing students and saying, you know, you need to repeat, you need to repeat third grade or, you know, whatever it is that they've got in place. Look, those are the things that we don't hear about, and those impact our students with the highest needs the most. I just think I go back to what I said earlier. We know what the answer is.
Yeah.
We know what we need to do here in the state. We don't need to hold a big stick and say that it's the fear of being sued that will get you to do the right thing. We know what the right thing is, and it's up to us, the people of this state, to hold our elected leaders accountable. This is very popular, investing in our public schools and making sure that all of our kids have the same opportunities and then some. This is very popular. And when we see people who are saying, no, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, the rest of our state understands who those people are who are depriving our students of what they need. I think that's pretty motivating for people who like to get elected. And I hope that we can build a movement that will shine a spotlight on who is denying all of our students.
Considering Florida just locked up a woman for telling people the truth about the coronavirus numbers in their state, I don't think you should trust any studies that come out of Florida, basically. So,
well,
they have a tendency of fudging the numbers a little bit down there.
Most of my friends who I've called to ask them, you know, tell me more about, you know, our constitutional changes and how this changed the state of education in Florida. They just shake their heads. They don't point to it. They're not seeing it at all. Mm-hmm. So we have some fact checking we need to do there. But I think the point is, we know schools aren't working for everyone. That's true. We know what works. Let's put those things in place and really make a difference in kids' lives tomorrow, not a year from now, 10 years from now. You know, whenever a court case gets on the docket, let's just do what we need to do.
And let's not reward the people who've been trying to sabotage education in Minnesota by basically passing a bill that allows them to, what they can't do in the Congress, they can do in the court. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. Denise, I wanted to actually say, we don't have time to touch on it, but congratulations on the court win last week. That was nice to see. I'm glad you guys got that victory there. Thank you very much. All my best. And to everyone at the Teachers Union, you guys are wonderful. I love teachers. I've had three kids go through the education system in the public education system in the state, and it's exceptional. All my best. It's a very trying time, and I know you guys are doing a very, very tough job right now. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I look forward to chatting again.